You are listening to the cycling podcast, at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 15, today we're in Foix.
Well, fellas, the Tour de France, eh? Here we are. Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Foix. We would be on the gently lapping banks of the Ariège, but we're actually next to the motorway. All glamour. We are around a swimming pool, though, at our hotel on the outskirts of Foix.
We are. François, how are you?
I'm not too bad, yeah. It's a place. I've been to his hotel many times, I think, 4 or 5 times in the past. So it, well, looks familiar.
It's been refurbished. It's been refurbished. Here, it's been Monsieur refurbed, promised we'd enjoy our stay when I booked it.
And the Tour de France has had a refurbishment, hasn't it? Because we're seeing a cracking race this year. Lots of chat today about whether this is the best tour so far since 1989. That's the consensus.
I don't think there's a lot of doubt about that, is there? Okay, the lead hasn't changed hands, but the racing has been fantastic every day except one. That Friday, the trundle that Dylan Groenewegen won, that was, now I feel bad about complaining.
We needed
about
that,
it.
Didn't we?
We did need that, yeah. But, well, we were talking on our way here. When was the last time the Tour reached the second rest day with everything really genuinely to play for and the yellow jersey not looking like it was going to be carried all the way to Paris by the person wearing it?
And difficult to call, isn't it? Nobody, you speak to people and people on teams, riders, nobody knows who's going to win this tour.
No.
Probably, in a way, we probably knew that from the start, you know? It was already difficult to say at the start of the Tour de France who was the favourite. We had like 5, 6, 7, 8 serious names, when in the past, you know, we would say, oh, you know, when in pre-tour coverages in magazines and the press, you always have 10 names and... And well, we knew that, you know, 9 of them were probably bullshit, and that there was one overshadowing the rest. Without Chris Froome, without even Tom Dumoulin, with a Nibali, you know, we knew was not going for anything here.
Maybe this is the answer for the Tour de France. The outliers are barred from taking part. There's a ranking system, and the top three are not allowed to take part because
or the previous winner or something. Yeah.
Well, there's no pecking order. There's no hierarchy, and that's the key thing. We were just saying if Chris Froome was here and not 90% of the level he was at the previous years, then we'd be looking at a completely different race, perhaps with Thomas and Bernal providing very, very strong support. But those two left to lead their team, and let's not forget Egan Bernal was probably most people's favourite, but he's only 22 years old. Mm. And what we're seeing is just a terrifically open race.
So in a way, you know, all these years, these past years, we kind of complained and grumbled about team sky domination, you know, salary caps and things. Well, you know, we've been looking all these years, there were many, many suggestions how to improve cycling, how to make it more spectacular, how to improve the courses, the races, the organisers, the things. And it's, well, as we see, it's simple, you know, take out the favourites and you have a good race.
But I think we can also see that some teams have really closed the gap to Team Sky. And I think, you know, Jumbo-Visma, Groupama, FDJ, the way they raced today was fantastic. They've raised their game. I don't think Team Ineos / Sky have come down too much, but they've raised their game. We'll hear what Nicolas Portal, the sports director at Team Ineos, thinks about that. But let's have the tale of a breathless etape, shall we?
Well, yes, shall we? I mean, the one thing about today's stage, stage 15, from Limoux to Foix and the climb of Prat d'Albis, which was 185 kilometres, was that it didn't contain a big mountain. It wasn't successive or category or first category mountains. The Mur de Peguer is a beautiful looking climb. The climb that they finished on, similarly beautiful looking, narrow and kind of the Tour de France of the old days, the 80s, when I first watched the tour. It felt like roads for race, real racing on, and that's what we saw. Because if the end of yesterday's stage was good, this was a thriller from start to finish. Simon Yates won his second stage in 4 days to take the sting out of his brother Adam's time losses on the Tourmalet yesterday and give Mitchelton Scott their third stage win of the race. He was the real danger man in the big break that was actually packed with star names, including a lot of people who'd lost time on the Tourmalet yesterday. Nairo Quintana was in there, so was Romain Bardet, Dan Martin, Guillaume Martin, Roman Kreuziger, Roach, Herrada, Ciccone, Amador Bilbao, Woods, Freilich, Galopin and Simon Geschke. And, well, that's only about half the riders who are in it, which gives you an indication of just how strong that break was. The racing itself really kicked off on that penultimate climb, the Mur de Peguer. Simon Geschke of Team CCC went clear, and he opened a really good gap, probably sensing that against the likes of Bardet and Quintana, perhaps, and certainly Simon Yates, he probably wouldn't have much chance. So he probably, his shoulders maybe slumped a little bit when Simon Yates joined him over the top of that climb, and they worked very well together on the descent and the small bit of flat there was before the final climb. But Simon Yates wasted no time. A couple of Ks into the climb, he dropped Geschke and soloed away to the top. And that was that as far as the race for the stage was concerned. But behind them came the day's real drama, and it all kicked off when Movistar's Mikel Landa attacked on the penultimate climb, bridged across to a couple of Movistar teammates, Marc Soler and Andre Amador, who'd been in the early break. And then he went through them and set off in pursuit of Simon Yates. Richard, you said Landa has ridden a la Landa today. I mean, it was classic Landa.
Well, no, he's ready. His tour at Alalanda, isn't he? Really, I mean, as at the Giro. But we were looking at his overall position because he was in that front group in the crosswind stage, and he was bumped off the road. It was a terrible accident. He lost a couple of minutes, but actually, he'd still be in exactly the same place overall, albeit a bit closer. He would. Had that not happened.
Yeah. Anyway, the real battle kicked off when Thibaut Pinot, yesterday's stage winner, of course, attacked after another brilliant stint by his Groupama FDJ teammate David Gaudu. That was with around 6 kilometres of the climb to go. And, well, it dragged out Julian Alaphilippe, the yellow jersey, initially, and Emmanuel Buchmann, who we managed not to mention yesterday, despite a brilliant ride on the Tourmalet. Egan Bernal also went with. But one by one, they were all dropped, and Pinot really looked like a man who was trying to set himself up to be able to win the Tour in the final week. Behind, they didn't really know what to do. Steven Kruiswijk tried to react with around 3 kilometres to go, and as I said to our colleague Julien Preteau, I think Geraint Thomas is waiting for the 2 kilometres to go banner, and then he will give it a real track team pursuit effort from there, which is what he did. That eventually shook off Alaphilippe. So the situation was that on the line, Alaphilippe lost 25 seconds of his overall advantage to Geraint Thomas. Kruiswijk is still third. Pinot is now fourth, 2 minutes 20 behind Alaphilippe, but crucially only 15 seconds behind Geraint Thomas. Remember, Pinot lost 1:40 in the crosswinds on the way to Albi last week, but in 2 days he's taken back 1:41 on Geraint Thomas. 36 seconds yesterday, 49 seconds today, and 16 seconds in bonuses. I mean, this Tour could not be more finely balanced. We have a rest day in Nîmes tomorrow, a couple of sort of shadow boxing days, and then 3 massive days in the Alps that are going to decide this Tour, and we genuinely don't know who is going to win.
The fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our headline sponsor. Reminder that the Rafa Films EF Gone Racing can be found on the Rafa channel at YouTube or at rafa.cc. The most recent one was following Lachlan Morton on his pretty epic, gnarly ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. A lot of it off-road. Fantastic. Watch that. Highly recommended. And also, you can buy your cycling podcast range of clothing, Pedalar de Charme clothing, at rafa.cc as well. Quite a few nominations today for Peter Sagan for Pedalar de Charme for signing somebody's book while climbing. I think it was the Tourmalet yesterday. He was riding up the Tourmalet, as you do, and somebody running alongside him proffered a copy of his autobiography. So you could see Sagan thinking about it, and then he duly signed it.
Sagan riding a la Sagan, that really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it was good to see. So yeah, keep your nominations coming in for Pedalar de Charme.
I was a bit disappointed that you didn't sign the book while doing a wheelie, you know. But
next time. Yeah, but only Sagan could really do that. So what a what a day's racing. I mean, we thought yesterday was good. Today was a humdinger of a stage. And, I mean, Thibaut Pinot is just irresistible. And I wonder, you know, you do wonder if he'd be racing like this had he not lost that time. He's really, he's on the back foot and he's having to come out fighting. But he's...
Well, what do you think? I mean, do you not think he would have waited till maybe 3K to go instead of going...
Yeah, he went very early, didn't he? He went very, very early.
He's obviously very strong. He's obviously in the form of his life. He's obviously reached a maturity he didn't have in the past. I heard, I don't know if it's true, that Geraint Thomas told some... Well, a Norwegian colleague told me Geraint Thomas had said that, you know, Pinot had always... cracked once in Grand Tours before. If it's true, it's not very nice of Geraint because he cracked up himself quite a few times in the past. We don't know, but so far, the question is, Edin, you know, maybe these the time lost in the crosswinds, you know, acted as a spur for Pinot to attack even more, hardly in the Tourmalet and perhaps as you say as well, given this impetus he got, he also attacked probably earlier and stronger today in the final climb than he might have ridden a little bit more conservatively had been with the other guys. So yeah,
and he's a confidence player, isn't he? He'll take so much confidence from this. The one cloud on his horizon is the heat that we're expecting over the final week. That could be an issue for him. And he has, I mean, Geraint Thomas is right. He has, you know, remember last year at the Giro, rode very strongly. He was riding into the podium and he fell ill over the last sort of 24 hours of the race. So we can't assume that he's going to remain this strong all the way to Paris. But at the moment, he looks certainly the strongest rider in the race, but he's still got that deficit to make up. He's doing a good job of nibbling away at it, though.
But the great thing is there's no time trial in the final week to kind of tempt everyone just to wait. You know, even the non-specialists would tend to... That would always be lurking in the back of the mind that, you know, they would have to factor in what they might lose in the time trial. It alters the mentality of the racing. This has got to be decided on the road, and really it's got to be decided in those three final mountain stages, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. And I think that plays in Pinot's favour because he can attack and will attack.
Yeah, and... Well, let's hear from his brother and coach, Julien Pinot, at Groupam FDJ. A great team performance for them today. Here he is talking to Francois at the finish.
Julien, let's face it, Thibaut has been one of the strongest, if not the strongest, men in the past 2 days. What does it mean? What does it say for the rest of the tour?
The first big satisfaction is the win yesterday. Because at the start of the Tour de France, the first goal was to win at least a stage. So we are really happy with that. And yesterday we saw that he had a little margin to climb in a higher pace in the final. So today the goal was to gain some times to the other GC contenders. So.
Which he did.
Yeah, he did, yeah. So it's a good, really good thing. But now we have 3 days to wait the Alps. We know that there will be really hot temperature in the next two stage. But yeah, we will see.
Are you surprised by the level of Thibaut? And you shouldn't be because you're his coach, but are you a little bit surprised?
Not surprised. The goal this winter was to be at the Tour de France with the same level than last Vuelta and the last World Championship Lombardia. So it was the goal. So we work hard to be at this level. Mm-hmm. So we are not surprised. He is at this level. Yeah. But
are you surprised by the relative weakness of the other teams? I mean, Team Ineos or Team Sky in the past were always setting the pace. It's not the case this year. Is it surprising in your mind?
Yes, but we have in mind the last Giro when we're from to take the GC win in only one stage. So there is three big stage in the Alps. So for us, it's not finished, and it's important to be careful with them. Yeah.
You hope Thibaut has not peaked yet. I mean, he has to peak in the last week, I suppose, and in the Alps.
Yeah, the goals for everyone is to keep the best level in the third week. But there is a, except if he is a hill, there is no reason to decrease on the last three hard stage, because the confidence and the feelings are good. The dynamic of the team is positive. So yeah, we are confident.
And lastly, another fixture that's very important. The team seem very, very strong this tour.
Yeah. We have four climbers, and they work really hard. David is impressive at his age. But yes, we want to continue like that the last week.
Julien Pinot there, and I mean, he's obviously worked with Thibaut Pinot his whole career. The story of Pinot's career is one of continuity, isn't it? He's been with the same team his entire professional life, the same people around him. Nothing's changed a great deal, but there's been this very gradual progression. He's 29 now, and it seems to be falling into place for him.
Yeah, I mean, I said it in the podcast before, you know, this year, you feel something has changed in the team. Even Marc Madiot's antics, you know, when he won the stage yesterday, looked like they were kind of prepared, you know. Is it everything is falling into place, except, of course, the crosswinds incident, and the confidence in the team is sky high. I mean, they have, you know, David Godu is absolutely amazing. He was amazing again today. This, you know, Reichenbach.
Reichenbach did a great job today.
Did a great job today to set it up. They've got this team that has been, you know, they could have made the same choice as Jumbo Visma and take Arnaud Démare on board to secure a couple of sprint wins, you know, which they did in the past. They really built the team around Thibaut Pinot. You can tell his confidence has changed, he's matured. He talks to the press in a much more relaxed way. And you were mentioning, you know, falling ill a number of times. We all noticed that, and his father said, you know, told L'Equipe about it. Every time he's coming to the bus, that there's a guy behind, you know, a mechanic or a soigneur to put a jumper on his shoulder, because you know they know he's fragile, he could have a virus or something. So, you know, and also I talked to Philippe Mauduit yesterday. The little changes they made by making the Madiot brothers maybe a little bit less prominent and bring more experience and, you know, outside view of things. Mauduit is a very, 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 you know, he has a carefree, he's very relaxed, he's very experienced, he's a soothing character in many ways. I think all these little marginal gains, speak in Pinot's favour.
I wonder also the significance of the fact that Pinot's coach is his brother, and they have a relationship that goes beyond just coach and athlete, their relations as well. Francois, this struck me yesterday or the day before when you were talking about the sports directors at AG2R La Mondiale really at a loss to know what had happened to Romain Bardet, and saying that they would have to sit down and talk to the coaches and work out what had gone wrong. And it struck me again when I spoke to Tim Kerrison yesterday about Geraint Thomas's slight faltering on the Tourmalet. The coaches are the people who are, you know, they're preparing the riders, they work with them much more closely. The sports directors are directing operations, but are really only working with the ingredients that are delivered by the coaches. And so the fact that Pinot and Pinot are blood relatives, I think there's something really intriguing to me about that. And without being sort of taking it to a kind of a facile level, you know, what were they like as children? I mean, Pinot is, Julien is 3 years older, I think, mm-hmm. than Thibaut.
Yeah.
I mean, when they were playing with toy cars, was Julien telling Thibaut how to move them around and what to do? Or I'd be fascinated to know more about their relationship, because that is a real key relationship to winning the tour.
As he was telling us before La Planche des Belles Filles, when we interviewed Julien for the Kilometer Zero, they were actually in kind of in competition, you know, together, because Julien, before becoming a coach, was also a gifted rider. So that was his first competition. And then when Julien realized how gifted his younger brother was, he changed roles a little bit and became the coach. But I think the difference as well is that Julien Pinot is always in the Groupama FDJ bus. He wears a Groupama FDJ outfit. He's a member of the team. Whereas some other coaches, you don't even know them. I mean, they sometimes they don't come on the tour, or if they do, they have their own car. I mean, they live kind of a little bit apart or outside the team as such. It was not the case for Team Sky, you know, with because coaches are also part of the team. But maybe Julien Pinot is more, even more than other coaches, part of the all outfit, and that might be a reason why it's working out well this year. It all clicks into place after a long while. And once again, I think Marc Madiot, you know, has now retired to a role of, he's not even a manager anymore. He's kind of an ambassador of the team, and so he does his show. He talks to the press a little bit, takes the VIPs, and screams at the finish. Yvon Madiot, the brother, who's always been the guy who's potted the young talents and kind of, you know, bred them he's still there, but he's more in the shadows, playing a different role, perhaps more tactical than Julien Pinot, who it's not his role to the tactics are more a team director, sports director role. And so, you know, I think the role of everybody in this team is quite clear now. And well, for the time being, it pays off.
Well, they're mounting a real challenge, you know, in the way that the team has been organized. Well, David Godu has been outstanding the last 2 days. It was a day of three 22-year-olds with Godu playing a really important role. Leonard Kamna, the very young and exciting prospect at Team Sunweb, finishing, I think, was he sixth on the stage in the end? He was in the breakaway. He was the only survivor of the break, along with Simon Yates, to finish in the top 10. Really strong ride from him. And, of course, Egan Bernal, who we kind of forget is still so young. And still, you know, last night we sort of, you know, you pick up on the sort of momentum of the race, and it seemed that the momentum was against Geraint Thomas and Egan Bernal. But you look at the results tonight as we head into the second rest day, and they're still well positioned. I mean, given that, you know, Alaphilippe faltered so badly today, Geraint Thomas is in pole position to take over the yellow jersey still, having had two quite difficult days. He's still in a strong position. Shall we hear from Nico Portal, the sports director at Team Ineos? I spoke to him at the finish. Here's what he had to say. Is this going to be the toughest tour to win?
Yeah, probably. I mean, 1-2 was also quite hard with Froome when we were being like really close. It was something like 30, 40 second march a few years ago. But this one is different. We don't have yellow, and it's a big battle. So yeah, you have to be consistent.
What's the difference this year? Is it the level of the others is up, or the level of your guys down?
I think it's probably the level of the other guys. They are quite high. Yesterday, the Tourmalet, I think, is, I'm not sure, but I think it's never been going that quick in history. So, and on the top is, until 1-2K to go, it was a lot of bike riders. So I think the level is pretty high, yeah.
And what within the team, do you have a decision to make now about who's the leader of the team, or is it still open?
No, I think we can see today. They're all, both they are really good, and it's been fantastic to see how they played the game. That was really good. So I think that's for us a big advantage. It's a big advantage for Egan to have a J like this, and for G also for Egan. So that's, I think we have to just to keep supporting our two guys, and hopefully that will smile for us.
Who's the biggest threat now?
Don't know, because it's quite a lot.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that our coverage is sponsored by the Watt Bike Atom. Thank you very much to Watt Bike for supporting the cycling podcast here during the Tour de France. Richard and I both had a go with the Watt Bike before we came out here, and in this episode of our Watt Bike segment, we're going to hear from Dan Bigham of Hoob Watt Bike, the track team who, well, they caused a bit of a sensation in the world of track cycling. We asked him how he used the Watt Bike to hone his team's preparation for their track objectives.
So from our perspective, I guess using multiple different ways, both summer and winter. Throughout winter, it's just a continual tool, I guess, all week round. You do everything on it, whether it's Zwift racing, whether it's just your longer base mileage, just because you don't want to go outside in the pouring rain and can't be bothered to clean your bike afterwards, even if it's more specific stuff. So the good thing with, we've got both the Atom and the Pro, so we can do more standing start based stuff and a lot of really hard full gas efforts, which is obviously very specific to the track. So we've got the advantage of both on that side. Through summer, it's more the specificity, I think, of the fact that, yeah, you've got the time to go out and do longer rides and road races and all the other stuff, but you still want to get inside and make sure you hit the numbers in the intervals, and I think nowhere to hide from that, and you've got to get it done, and it's a lot easier than getting caught behind a lorry or a car. And it sounds stupid, but that's annoyingly common problem, trying to find a good road that you're not going to get obstructed on to get your effort. So why not just get it done inside, which is pretty much what we've done.
Well, Dan Bigham there, fascinating guy and a fascinating story behind the team that he runs, Hoob Watt Bike. We had an episode dedicated to them earlier this year, but he's a real expert on aerodynamics and on training and using the sort of data that you get from your Watt Bike to improve performance. And he's working as a consultant, I believe, with quite a few teams now, including Canyon SRAM, in particular on aerodynamics. So a good rider in his own right as well, and yeah, really interesting guy.
Well, we'll be hearing more from Dan in subsequent episodes. If you would like to buy a Watt Bike Atom, you have until July the 31st to also get £100 worth of Sigma Sport vouchers with your purchase. So go to wattbike.com/TCP100. That's wattbike.com/TCP100 and use the code TCP100. That's TCP100 at checkout to get £100 worth of Sigma Sport vouchers.
Well, we heard before the break there from Nicolas Portal, the sports director at Team Ineos. And, you know, the dynamics between Bernal and Thomas are interesting. Geraint Thomas gave an interview at the summit to Television's Daniel Freeb, I think it was. Geraint Thomas said the fact that Bernal was up the road left him in a difficult position, not being able to chase behind. This is the flaw in the joint leaders plan, which Portal confirmed there would continue. They would continue to ride with the pair of them, both in a, you know, good position to win, and I suppose let the road decide. But the road's not doing a great job of deciding at the moment, because they're quite evenly matched. Bernal looks a bit stronger on the climbs, but I'm not sure that Bernal being up the road did put Thomas in a compromised position, because he's the one that's in the best place to take the yellow jersey should Alaphilippe lose that time. And he made his effort quite late on. He said he had the legs to have gone earlier. He didn't do so for those tactical reasons. And that seemed a little bit strange.
Very strange, really. I mean, Team Ineos have got a problem there. And one thing we didn't really talk about last night, and possibly unfair to Bernal, we didn't really give him the credit as a 22-year-old for being as good as he was yesterday and being as high overall as he was. Well, he still is. But the problem that Ineos have, if they're going to operate this dual leadership strategy in the final three big mountain stages, is that the others aren't strong enough at the moment. Wout Poels kind of was best of the lot today, but we didn't see the full strength of a Team Sky train of old. You know, Kwiatkowski's been pretty disappointing so far. Now, he may come good in the final week, or he may be being saved for the final week, but it doesn't give me that impression the way they've been riding. They've been short-handed, really. And if they're short-handed and operating a dual leadership strategy, well, they're going to land themselves in exactly this dilemma repeatedly, because if one goes, then the other one has to sit. And that may end up, rather than benefiting one of them, it may end up costing both of them.
Well, ultimately, there's no such thing as joint leaders, because in the end, only one person can win the Tour de France. We kind of saw it with the Schleck brothers. I mean, we're talking about the 2011 Tour de France, and it happened then with the Schleck brothers, who ended up second and third on the podium. And, you know, there were moments in the Pyrenees, especially the first mountain range that year, where you felt Schleck was looking for Frank, Andy Schleck was looking for Frank, and they were cancelling each other out a little bit.
So unless the idea is for the old 1-2 and to really, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, let's be, you know, a little bit reasonable. Maybe Geraint Thomas was pacing himself in the last climb and he made his effort at the last minute, right? Maybe, you know, Bernal, I mean, they don't know, you know, they have yet to decide. But the facts, you know, the race and the mountains is a cruel thing, and the fact is both of them were dropped, you know, and I don't think it was a tactical drop. I mean, in the big mountains in the Tour so far, both of them have been dropped by other riders, you know. So whatever the tactics in the past, we could say, oh well, you know, they're pacing themselves, the tactic is this or that, because we kind of discounted the rivals. There was no rivalry, you know, so it was, oh yeah, but all these team tactics are kind of irrelevant if we're talking about who from Bernal or Geraint Thomas will finish ahead of the other. The aim is to win the Tour.
Yeah, I mean, you don't tactically let Thibaut Pinot go on the road.
No way.
But having said all this, you know, Geraint Thomas remains second overall, and he's a lot closer to Alaphilippe tonight than he was last night, and Bernal remains fifth overall, and really, any of the top six could still win this race.
Of course. And, well, talking about the team dynamics, just a quick word on Jumbo-Visma, who for 2 days in a row have had strength in numbers with three riders. Stephen Kraswijk is third overall now. George Bennett's been riding extremely well. Laurens de Plus riding extremely well. But George Bennett at the finish today was making the point that actually having strength in numbers can work against you, because everybody looked to them to chase. There was the descent and then the flat. Basically, Jumbo-Visma got lulled into or seduced into chasing perhaps earlier than they wanted to, and that left, you know, Bennett without the legs on the final climb to help Kraswijk. And so, you know, having strength in numbers is only as good as you can, you know, then realize with those legs. Well, so,
you know, I often like in these kind of discussions about team tactics, I often like to put in the picture that my old friends at Movistar were again today at such a sophisticated tactic that, well, what to
half,
think?
They had half the team up the road.
Well,
four riders
it worked.
Up the road.
Yeah, I mean, Landa's gone, you know, leapfrogged to Alejandro Valverde, who almost accidentally and without meaning to is in the top 10. I mean, Valverde's sort of from the start has been making noises and riding as though he wants to ride in a supporting role, but it's almost like, you know, no, after you. I mean, Quintana's very disappointing, and you know, this is a couple of years now where his decline has been quite evident, and he does not look like the rider that he was in 2013, 14, 15 at all. Landa, very unfortunate to have lost that time on the crosswind stage when he crashed. It wasn't his fault. He's now up to 7th, 4:54 down. He still looks very strong. He's the only rider to stay with Pinot today when Pinot was in full flight.
And crucially, he is a rider who causes people to think. George Bennett said the reason they chased and got sucked into chasing earlier than perhaps they would want to was because Landa posed a threat. They didn't want to let him back into the picture. And that will be the case again in the Alps. Yeah. Somebody will have to keep him on a reasonably short leash.
But once again, in the case of Movistar tactics too, whatever they were, there were also an admission of defeat, because Landa was obviously going for the stage and not for the GC.
Having said that, he did say at the finish that he thinks podium is still possible, and it might be. And you know, Marc Soler and Andre Amador did a great job for him when he was trying to bridge across on his own, and they really helped him in the valley before the climb when he could obviously take over. So that worked well, to give Movistar a little bit of credit there. What about Alaphilippe though today? I mean, when he went with Pinot attacked and Alaphilippe went. This is both his strength and his weakness, isn't it? I compared him to Duracell Bunny the other day when I was speaking to Alex Dowsett. He's so kind of effervescent, and he's like an Alka-Seltzer or something. You know, he's just this is the thing that makes him such an exciting rider to watch. It's what wins him so many races, but it's what might cost him the Tour de France. He couldn't sort of, had he just stayed with the Thomas group when Pinot jumped, he may have lost a little bit less time. He paid for that effort in the end, I think.
I think the problem with the type of rider he is, and in my opinion, I haven't changed on that too much. You know, I really don't see him holding his lead. The way he faltered today, he's going to falter in the same way at least once in the Alps, and it'll be the end of him. The problem is it's just the type of rider he is. He can resist one attack or a couple, but the change of. I was talking to a colleague today, and I was comparing that to athletics. You know, when if you run a 5,000 meters and you have a 800 meter specialist in there, if you have a steady tempo and you don't drop the guy, he'll win easily, because in the final lap, you know, he'll, so that's the kind of rider. Alaphilippe is a kind of 800 meters runner, and in the, if he's with you in the final lap, he'll win the stage. But if you have Kenyans or Ethiopians changing the pace, you know, all the time, which was the case with the pace changed many times, attacks, this is when the riders of the same type as Julien Alaphilippe, finally struggle and can't hold.
And I think that exactly what you've just said, Francois, exactly explains his performance on the Tourmalet. If they don't do enough to drop him, the one thing he can do is finish. And so the fact they weren't able to drop him on the Tourmalet meant that he was able to pop up, get second, a few more bonus seconds. That's not the way to beat Alaphilippe. As hard as it was, it needed to be a little bit harder. And as you say, the changes in pace today on the climb and the nature of the climb may have just made that task a little bit easier. As you mentioned earlier, Lionel, we didn't mention Emmanuel Buchmann last night. He is one of those guys in the top six. And as a listener pointed out, I'll read the tweet. Amazing that you can make a podcast about the stage without even mentioning Buchmann. His attack caused Thomas to drop. Well, George at Animal Mother, we're capable of things like that all the time. I'm sure we miss out people every night. But
I must say that last night at dinner, you know, we were discussing the stage again a very nice dinner, I must say. But we're discussing that, and all of a sudden, you know, we admitted to ourselves, we forgot about Buchmann.
Buchmann is. I mean, it was his acceleration that got rid of Geraint Thomas on the Tourmalet, but he is. It, by his nature, sort of a la Zubeldia rider. You know, if Landa is riding a la Landa, Buchmann, of all these guys, is kind of riding a la Zubeldia. I don't know if that might be a little bit unfair, but, you know, he's a very quiet, unassuming guy, but riding extremely well. Said at the finish that he had the best legs he's ever had in his career. I was able to ask him two quick questions. Let's hear him now. Emmanuel, the last couple of days you've been one of the strongest climbers with so much climbing still to come. Do you think you can win this tour?
Yeah, it would be a dream, but the top 10 is the goal for me, and I will keep going, and we will see what in the end the result is.
Do you feel you're as strong as any other rider in the race?
Yeah, I think Pinot is for the moment the strongest climber, and he's the favourite now, I think.
I mean, Buchmann there, interestingly, saying that Pinot is the strongest in the race. For him, he's the favourite, but there is this just great uncertainty around everybody about who is going to win and how that's going to unfold.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast and supporting you in your endeavours. You can get 25% off with the code SISCP25 at scienceinsport.com. Now, on Tuesday, when the race resumes in Nîmes, Stacey Snyder's mugs, cycling podcast mugs, will go on sale. They are raising money for two great causes, the David Carey Scholarship Fund and the West Lothian Cycle Circuit. The Giro Cups that she made raised over $2,500 for the two causes that we chose on that occasion. So, you know, that was fantastic. And the Tour de France mugs, well, the first batch sold out in 8 minutes, so we're expecting the second batch to sell out quickly as well. So, act quickly. They go on sale at 3 p.m. French time on Tuesday, 9 a.m. U.S. East Coast time. Sorry that doesn't suit everybody, but it's the best, I think, that we can do. I gave out the wrong website address the other night. I apologize for that. It's stacysnyder.com, stacysnyder.com. And you can check, you can buy the mugs through there. She's on Twitter as well, Stacey, at Snyder Ceramics. So if you want a mug, act quickly. That's all I can say, really. And look forward to handing the proceeds from those cups over to those two very good causes. So the other business from the stage, I mean, it's amazing we can get this far into the podcast and hardly mention Simon Yates, who won the stage's second stage and a third stage for Mitchelton Scott, and some consolation for another disappointing day for Adam Yates, who was their GC leader, but he slipped to 24th overall. And, you know, Simon Yates, having ridden a la Atapuma at the start of the tour, you know, he came here to support his brother in the third week. Well, he's in the shape to have done a great job had he been required, I think. But you wonder, he's obviously in good form, and had he come to the Tour and not deliberately lost that time, whether he would be up there as well, fighting for overall.
Speculation, isn't it, that? But
based on him clearly being in quite good form, yeah. Lionel, there's some evidence behind it.
Yeah, but he had a difficult Giro in the end, didn't he?
He did.
And maybe, you know, I mean, not to be sniffed at, is it? Two Tour de France stage wins in a handful of days is a fantastic result, and really shows what Mitchelton Scott are made of. And we had all this talk earlier in the race about how so few teams mimic Team Ineos in their single-minded focus on just trying to win the overall. Well, you can't criticise Mitchelton Scott at all. They've won three stages. They've won them all in a real kind of exciting way. They've taken the initiative, and they've responded and bounced back from disappointment that their overall race is floating upside down, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Simon Yates deserves, I mean, plaudits, because, I mean, there were two men of the Pyrenees in this tour, Thibaut Pinot and Simon Yates. Simon Yates won two stages and two Pinot won. So, in a way, you know, he was even more the man of the Pyrenees than Thibaut Pinot was. But in this case, as I said before, you know, for other teams, the going for the stages for Mitchelton Scott is an admission of defeat. I mean, in the GC, unfortunately, Adam Yates, which is quite a disappointment, you know. He's been now 2 years in succession, you know, kind of missing his GC goals in Grand Tours, whereas Simon, you know, kind of succeeded a bit more than he did. It was a classic stage today. I mean, in terms of the way it went, you know, it was an ideal stage for a breakaway and for a breakaway to go all the way, and that's what happened. And in that breakaway, of course, you had all the losers, in a way, you know, all the guys who lost times and hopes and ambitions in the GC in the previous stage. And as you said in the you know, tale of l'étape, well, in this group, you know, this brilliant group, probably the freshest and the you know, the more opportunist of all the guys in the break were Simon Yates. So that was, and then the big battle for GC was at the back. It was more of a classic, the mountain stage than any we've had before in this tour. So to have Simon Yates winning this stage and the big battle for the yellow jersey taking place behind, with all the you couldn't dream of more exciting race, you know, at all levels.
Well, one rider who was in the break was Leonard Kamna, the 22-year-old German on Team Sunweb. They're stage hunting as well, really, at this race. But he rode extremely well. I saw him a couple of years ago in the Under 23 World Championships. It looks a great prospect, and rode exceptionally well today to finish sixth. He held on to Mikael Landa for a bit and, you know, looked the part, really, and finished sixth in the end. So second out of that big break, which, when you consider the names and the riders in there, that was an impressive performance from him. We'll hear from him, and then we'll go outside the team bus.
Yeah, I'm super happy with the performance and how it went out in the end.
I think you and Simon Yates, the only survivors of the break in the top 10.
Yeah, that makes me really proud. Simon Yates was by far the best, and the whole group was filled with a lot of good riders, so I'm really proud that I could be second out of the group, for sure.
I mean, it was a very fast start to the stage. How difficult was it to get into that move?
Yeah, I was first not feeling so good, so the first 25k I didn't jump once, and then when I felt okay, now the group could go, I started to go to the front and covered some moves. And in the end, it was just on power on the last climb, and I just made it in again. And then I could luckily recover a little bit.
And how were the feelings on the final climb? As you know, you were sort of fighting for the top 10. You had Landa come up. You stayed with him for a bit. What was that like?
Yeah, it was super fun. I was maybe not looking like it, but it was a really nice feeling.
Super fun.
Yeah, it looks in the moment, it looks like you're suffering and you're fighting, but in the end, when you feel all the spectators and you know, okay, I'm riding here in the front of Tour de France, then it starts to be fun. That's why we're all racing.
Based on what you've seen, who's going to win this Tour de France?
Oh, I think it will be interesting. Actually, I have no idea how the GC is right now, but I think there's a really interesting fight this year.
outside the team bus with
Simon Geschke, Team CCC. Simon, you had a front row seat to watch the Tour de France unfold today, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It was very exciting.
What was it like, first of all, getting in that break?
Yeah, it was super hard, actually. Yeah, if you see the names that were in the break, you see that it was not a break that just fell off the front. It went on a shorter climb, but it was all out. I was completely on the limit, and then we were with 40 guys. And that was it. Big groups never really worked together. There was no real harmony. At one point then it split, so the group got smaller, and then the closer we got to the final, then I decided to try something, because I knew if I wait for guys like Nairo and Bardet to attack, then I'm having a very hard time. So I tried to get some advantage before the last climb, and I was actually very, very happy when Simon Yates catched me on the top of the second last climb. So I was not alone in that descent. And from there on, I knew I'm racing for a second, because, if you approach a climb with Simon Yates, it's a big challenge.
You were the only guy from your team in the break. Did that in a certain way make it easier, because you can just make your own race?
Yeah, it's never easy in such a big break. Of course, it's nicer if you have a teammate also before there were a few attacks. But in the end, I did my own race. Sometimes I had to gamble a little bit. But in the end, I'm really happy with how it went. Also with my tactics, with my legs. I don't know if I could have done anything different today, yeah.
What did you think when you were kind of going backwards and you saw the whole race going on around you? I mean, what does that feel like?
Yeah, it was like what you see on TV, what I never see in the race. Yeah, they just passed me when Alaphilippe exploded, so that was a weird moment to see. He even was on my wheel for a while then to recover, and then he went again, and later also... G came, and it was nice to see. I think it was a very exciting final, the GC race and the race for the stage.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. I mean, did you pick up any clues as to who's maybe going best out of the GC riders?
I don't really care, actually. I did my race. We will see, yeah.
And what about the Alps? Have another go getting into a break next week?
Sure, yeah, we'll try, yeah.
And lastly, any plans for the rest day other than resting?
No, eating.
Well, that was Simon Geschke, stage winner a few years ago in the Gap, wasn't it? Where we're going?
No.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
It was Praloop. Do you say they pee on Praloop?
No, you don't. Praloop.
Oh, I don't know why I thought
so
it was Gap.
You were wrong. Richard and Sorry. I was wrong.
Oh, well, never mind.
But Simon Geschke, you know, is one of the bearded...
magnificent beard. Rider. And, you know, that team, CCC, they've not done an awful lot in this tour, so... and he's had a difficult year, of course, so good to see him back.
Yeah, he crashed and broke his collarbone in the Tour of Catalonia, didn't he, in March? So he's done well to come back and be fit for the Tour, really, and be in that break.
Absolutely, and it was a good break. So any other business from today, chaps? Before we start wrapping up, I want to just say again that we are doing an event in Harrogate at the World Championships this year on the Friday evening before the women's road race, and actually the men's road race on the Sunday. So if you're going to Yorkshire for the World Championships, come along to our event at the Royal Hall. It's the biggest event we'll ever have done, and it'll be myself, Lionel, Television's Daniel Freib, and Francois Tomaso.
Mm.
And perhaps
some guests.
Perhaps a special guest as well. Mm. We'll confirm that nearer the time. But the tickets are selling. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com, live events, the tab down the side, and you'll be able to get your ticket there.
Last thing maybe I wanted to add, because I know a number of our listeners have sent, you know, tweets and messages to me about Romain Bardet. It's funny that, you know, me myself, you know, mentioning the break and Simon Yates as the most prominent name maybe in there to win it, I kind of personally overlooked Romain Bardet as a potential winner. He was in this break. He tried to attack a little bit. He just, this year, doesn't have the legs. There was a very kind of moving picture in a way, sent on Instagram, I think, by the press, the Aegis-Voile Mondial press chief Yves Perret, whom we talked to yesterday, of Bardet finishing 20 minutes behind the front of the race yesterday with six teammates around him. So it was kind of a collective shipwreck there, and quite a pity. And and the question arises now that maybe Bardet, well, mind you, Pinot also had his bad times on in Grand Tours and in the Tour de France, but for a long time I suspected, and some of us do as well, that his obsession with the Tour de France is maybe a wrong idea, because he showed in Strade Bianche, finished his second in the World Championships, that maybe his career is somewhere else.
Well, he's only ever ridden one other Grand Tour. That was the Vuelta in 2017. He finished 17th. He's only 28. It's not like he's over the hill or anything. But this will be his worst Tour de France, objectively speaking. He could win a stage, of course, but his previous worst result was his debut, 15th in 2013. Every other time he's finished in the top 10, been on the podium twice, just not the same rider. And I suppose the shock is that normally he is so consistent in July in the Tour, and this year he is having one of those ones, as
he needs to maybe do what Pino did and go off and rediscover himself in Italy or Spain or somewhere.
Yeah, Pino has more of a string to his bow. He's done the Giro, done the Vuelta, he's gone off and tried to, and successfully won stages in other races.
He's got his farm, he's got his goats.
Yeah.
One of the suspicions has been Bardet's maybe got too many other things going on as well. He spends a lot of time cultivating his image, perhaps heading off to New York, hanging out with hipsters. I don't know if that's detracted at all from his.
So you think that maybe it's probably better to have a pond with cops in them than going to New York and live in a loft? Mm. Yeah.
But we can't go without mentioning Le Viscos last night.
Oh, yeah.
Francois's favourite Pyrenean hideaway. I've really had Le Viscos legs today.
You did a Rowan Dennis last night at dinner, didn't you? Abandoned in the feed zone.
I cracked.
To credit John Lester with that line. That was good.
Spectacularly. But a very, very delicious, quite delicate but also pretty rich meal, wasn't it? Francoise, you were saying that they're so friendly, they want to feed us like we're their, like they're our grandparents. We had two starters. One was a coddled egg.
Sure, when the trick is obviously when we showed even mild indecision about which starter to have, their response was, "We'll have both."
Yes.
I think we've got to go there and be decisive.
Yeah, you've
next
got to know
time
what your
that's right
is and stick to that, because indecision caught me out. The coddled egg with foie gras was extremely rich and creamy. The pate en croûte was quite rich, but had a very light, delicate vinegared grated vegetable, which was nice. The Bigorre pork was very, very rare and tasty, but also rich.
So it's
very tender.
Le Viscos is kind of a compulsory feed zone in the Tour de France. The problem is that the chef Alexis is kind of handing out three musettes instead of one. So and the funny thing, I discussed with Alexis at the end of the meal, and his big project in the coming year is to write a cookbook on vegan food. So
it would be probably a little lighter, a vegan meal.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely delicious and really one of the highlights of the tour. But perhaps 2 weeks in, I found it quite heavy going. It was like having to ride three or category mountains. Today I only just managed to hold it together. I only just managed to have one small sausage from the barbecue buffet down next to the river at Foix.
You've changed, Lionel. Amazing. We should say hello and thanks to Boyd Scott, a listener to the podcast, who came up and said hello to us in the restaurant last night. And he'd actually gone to Le Viscos on our recommendation,
and had
a nice dinner.
Yeah.
So thanks
nice
for that.
Him.
Thanks for saying hello. And before we go, let's say some thank yous to friends of the podcast. My thanks to David Cockings, Andrew Backhouse, Stuart Sloan, Trevor Barton, Stephen McGraw,
and Ian Sargent.
James Burns, Jamie Brockenhurst, William Murray, Ellen Orrell, Brian Powell, Alistair Benetto.
And a big thank you to James Doggett, Amy Goymore, Famille... Oh, that, I'm assuming that's La Famille Summerbell. Oliver Shaw, Robert Burns. That's one for you, Richard.
Oh, Robert and, Burns. Thanks,
and
Robert.
Andrew Rabbi. Howard. Andrew Howard, thank you very much for your support. We've got some great Friends of the Podcast content coming up after the Tour de France, including our rambling, shambling road trip round France.
Absolutely. But that's all for now. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, Richard.
We'll be back with our press conference on tomorrow's rest day.